With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Welcome to the Multifamily Zone, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from the family perspective. Now, here are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro.
Hey everyone, this is Julia Barbaro, host of the Multifamily Zone podcast. I am here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro. Gino.
Julia.
How are you?
I met this guest at MM4. I'm going to hold up the book. I'm going to be pitching the book the whole time because it's about ministry. It's about the Lord. It's about wherever you start in life, it doesn't mean you have to end there. And it was a great book.
Tell me what it is.
Addicted to Life.
I want to introduce him first, but
it's really amazing. When I was reading the book, I felt really sad for a bit part of it. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to ask Claudia. I'm like, Claudia, how could she stay with him for that long? I thought I was married to a saint. I mean, this brings it to a whole new level. We're going to get into that in the conversation, but let me introduce the guests first. Rob and Claudia Rozell. Rob is the author of Addicted to Life, How I Went from Homeless to Extraordinary Success and Happiness in a Short Period of Time. In his own words, it is about overcoming obstacles that are holding you back from all that God has in store for you. Welcome to the show, Rob and Claudia.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us, guys. We're very excited to be here.
Isn't it amazing how the Lord opened this door? You came at MM4, you shoved the book in my hands. I took it. I'm like, I'm going to read the book. You know what? Let's get him on the podcast because it's a great, great message. Let's start out with November 2nd, 1999. What happened on that fateful day?
November 22nd, very, very good memory though, but November 22nd, 1999, I stumbled into a 30-day rehab, and the Lord has allowed that to be the last day I can honestly say that I had to pick up a drink or a drug.
What prompted that to be the last day? What's going on in your mind? How did you know that's it? Game over, done, I'm moving on.
You know, that's a great question. I'm not sure if I had the foresight to know that that was the end. I knew the pain of remaining the same was likely more than the pain to change. Mm-hmm. And I was ready to take those steps forward towards the change and go on faith that that I could actually get it done.
Could you share a couple of stories in the book about the struggles that you had, stealing blue jeans, putting them in, in strollers? See, I told you, I read the book. I mean, I'm saying to myself, if he was so creative, he could have been an entrepreneur so much sooner. The creativity and the intelligence.
He was just preparing.
I love the stories in the book. Can you share a couple of stories of people and say, hey, listen, I'm just a regular guy. I started out, I had a lot of problems. Obviously, I have an amazing partner that helped me out throughout this journey. But could you share a couple of stories in the book?
Well, let's talk about the one that, I don't talk about that particular story on many podcasts. So let's unpack that a little bit, right? Yes. So literally what you're referring to is the days where I would go into a full retail store. I would go over to the baby chairs, the baby car seats, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of air space in those boxes. And I figured out that I could fit 30 pairs of blue jeans in that box, 35 if it was smaller sizes. Mm-hmm. And I would pack that chair box full of that, the car seat box full of jeans and go and purchase them legitimately. I'd go over to the tape section because all those stores had tape too. I'd tape the box back up. I'd buy the box and go back and out to the car, empty the box and come back a little while later and return it and get my money back for the box. So I'm not proud of those days. I don't regret the past and I don't want to shut the door on the past because it is a story that brought me to where I am today, mm-hmm. So that is certainly not something I'm proud of, but when you talk about entrepreneurial skills, that was pretty creative back then. I'm not proud of it, but I did have to go and then I had to market those jeans. I had to know where I could unload those. And we did a lot of that. I knew everybody, unfortunately it was everybody at drug alleys, pant sizes that I knew that's where I would bring that stuff and unload that stuff. And that was part of what we did. It was just a bold and stupid things that we were doing in order to feed my drug habit. I want to be clear that Claudia, and for those that don't know, I'm a recovered crystal meth crack cocaine addict. And November 22nd, the date that we alluded to, is the day that I gave up on that stuff. And Claudia has never used drugs and has never drank very little, if at all. She was addicted to Rob Rozelle.
Ah. Claudia, before I get to you, there's one thing I want to point out, the proximity. And while you were doing all this crazy stuff, it was normal to you, right? I mean, it was probably more fearful to go out and get a 9-to-5 job, but you were in that whole realm, right? And it just seemed normal to you. Now that you look back, you might say to yourself, I can't believe I did that stuff. But when you're caught up in that, it's just regular routine, isn't it? Yes.
Well, unfortunately it does become routine. It's the people you hang around with, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's that influence. And so it looking back, God, it was like awful that we mm-hmm. did that stuff that we did. Mm-hmm. But yes, it totally became normal. Rob was an addict, but I shared in his behavior just because I was living with him and being with mm-hmm. him.
Mm-hmm. And Claudia, what compelled you, what prompted you to stay there, to have faith in Rob, to know that he was the person that you wanted to be with for the rest of your life? Because a lot of us listening were probably like, I've never done any of this behavior. I just want to cut loose. I'm sure your parents, as you say in the book, gave you a lot of pressure, your family members, everyone's telling you you're crazy. What prompted you to stay?
The only way I can answer that is it's God. Mm-hmm. Because I apologize, I always cry.
Oh my gosh.
Because I can't tell you how joyful I am to be able to have my husband with me and not be that person that has to maybe have suffered because he died because of addiction or he's in jail. I'm so every day grateful that we can be together. And again, it's only God, because mm-hmm. there is no way I could see what he was doing and say, oh, I'm going to stay with this guy, right?
Yeah.
And just like anyone else that comes up to me and I say, they're like, oh, I'm going to try and change him. Look, I thought I was going to change him, but there is no way I was going to change Rob. Mm-hmm. It could only be God. And it could only be God that allowed me to see past where he was and to know that we may have a future.
Yeah. We are ultimately responsible for our actions and what we're doing. But the hardest part sometimes is when we're not in control of the other people in our life and we're just sitting there watching. And, it's really heartbreaking to be the other person on the other side of that. We all know people with addictions and we feel helpless. We can't do anything. And so we're just left with prayer and we're there and we're there when they need us. But it's really a difficult moment. And a lot of people don't talk about those people, but it's a huge challenge. And there are a lot of people listening with someone in their life who is addicted. And I would like you, Claudia, to just give them some advice, just something that, yes, God was there with you, but you had to sit and say, I'm going to stay. I'm going to make that decision.
And it's having hope. Mm-hmm. I think in reality, it's just having hope and having the faith in God. Because reality is I couldn't change Rob. And mm-hmm. I didn't know if Rob was going to change, mm-hmm. but I had to believe that God had a plan and a purpose. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it came down to. I know that there's people going through this. I know that there's people that have lost loved ones.
Yeah.
And I just don't give up hope mm-hmm. because it can happen. It may not be the way you see it. It may not be in, in the next few weeks, it may not be in the next few years, but it could happen.
And I think you're the role model for Rob also. So you could have been a victim and played his game and you could have brought him down to your level, to his level, but you were probably the shining beacon. He probably looked at you one day and said, I want to be like her. I'm letting her down. That November day on November 22nd, I'm sure he said to himself, enough is enough. I've been an idiot all this time. I'm letting her down. What do I need to do? What's the next step? That's what I think was going through your mind. If it was me and I'm letting somebody down who really loves me, and every time I make a mistake, she's there to bail me out. And every time I got to hear her parents saying that I'm just letting them down, it weighs on you. So after a while, like you said, I think it's true that you just have to realize that you're letting people down, that she's holding you accountable. There's somebody to hold you accountable there. Rob, I want to ask you, in the book, you talk about other addictions. Everyone stigmatizes mm-hmm. the drug addiction, but there's so many addictions, whether it's the internet, mm-hmm. whether it's food, because you went from one addiction to another in the book, correct? You went to the food and to others. Can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Yeah, and one of the addictions I really don't talk about in the book at all is the addiction to gambling. And mm-hmm. quite frankly, that I am a recovered compulsive gambler. I won't say I gave that up on November 22nd, but I did give it up. I did give it up not long after. But what you're referring to that I do talk about in the book is mm-hmm. I switched addictions. I wasn't struggling with drugs and alcohol. I had switched over to cigarettes and food. Mm-hmm. When I walked into that rehab, I looked like Skeletor. I needed to gain 30 pounds. I gained 100 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I started smoking from one pack of cigarettes, two pack of cigarettes. I was up to four packs of cigarettes a day. If you can even imagine that, most smokers that smoke a couple packs a day go, how do you even smoke four packs a day? It was literally lighting one off of the other. And it was very, very limited amount of times throughout the day that I didn't have a cigarette in my hand. And finally, I said, you know, as I talk about my book, at 2 years clean and sober, I said, enough is enough. I'm done with that as well. So quite frankly, I was getting back to where I was, the way I felt about myself when I was still using. Those feelings of self-inflicted demoralization had come back because of cigarettes and food. Mm-hmm. And I was ready to relapse. And, you know, long before somebody goes back to drug and alcohol, the behavior comes back. And I was back in that depressed state mm-hmm. and I recognized it and said, look, I need to fix this or I'm going to go back to where I was and started changing. And I lost, I decided to, everybody's story is going to be different. Mine happened to involve Jenny Craig, and I went to Jenny Craig and I lost 70 pounds in 6 months mm-hmm. And got back to where I should be. And one day I pulled into the liquor store on my little motorized skateboard. You know what that's about because you read the book, right? So on my little motorized skateboard, I pulled into my liquor store where I would get my cigarettes and coffee every morning. And I bought Lifesavers and I said a prayer, Lord, please take the cigarettes away. Now, in all honesty, I had said that prayer many times and gone back on it, but that was the day that I was done, as chapter one talks about, you got to be done. Mm-hmm. I was done, and I have not picked up a cigarette since that day.
It comes down to the responsibility. I think your mind, all of a sudden, you became responsible. You said, that's mm-hmm. it, that's enough. And it doesn't happen overnight, everybody. It took Rob 3 years to pay back the IRS, to pay back all the fines, to pay back all the parking tickets. It doesn't happen overnight. But once you're responsible, like Claudia said, there's hope. Mm-hmm. And once you have that hope, there's a dream. And then Carlton Sheets comes into your life and you're like reading, you're watching videos and that doesn't work. You can't do anything for money, no money down, but you can. If you want to, and you're desperate enough, because we've bought deals with no money down. Mm-hmm. I love the strategy. And then going to work, and then all of a sudden doing something you like and having a skill, and then that door gets open, and then having people trust you. So if you're out there and, you know, everyone's always talking about charity and giving money, give people a chance. If you give mm-hmm. someone a chance, like someone gave Rob a chance, now Rob's in the position to give others a chance. I think that's what life's all about, coming mm-hmm. full circle mm-hmm. and doing it. Can you talk about that a little bit, that whole Carlton Sheets thing and getting the job at the auto side? Because you were a really good service manager, weren't you? Somebody saw something in you, but you put a lot of hard work into it, didn't you?
I did. And you know, that's a funny story on the Carlton Sheets, because I would sit there on the edge of my seat. If you could picture this, watching infomercials that I had seen numerous times before, because yes. these people that were having that success would just uplift me and encourage and inspire me. And I just knew someday I was going to have $500 on a credit card that I could buy that course. And mm-hmm. At that time we were still coming up. We didn't have a credit card, but one day, Providian, if anybody can remember that brand name, they sent me an application for a secured credit card. And I said, this is it, man. I just started saving up my money to be able to send them $500 and be able to, actually, it was two different applications and they did $300 each. Mm-hmm. So I set those up and I ended up using two credit cards to buy my Carlton Sheets course. And I listened to those tapes until they just wouldn't play anymore. I mean, if Carlton Sheets lost his voice, I could have done that seminar for him. I mean, I ate it up.
That is awesome. I love that.
The two of you, you know, coming out of, you know, drinking and drugs is one thing. Becoming sober is one thing. It was a major hurdle. But now you have life. Life is there. Your marriage is there. You know, families, their relationship, like you were saying, the health, finances, all of that And people think, okay, good, I'm sober. Now I'm good. But now there's life. So what's next? Like, you know what I mean? Like, give me this story or what it was like back then where you realize, okay, now we need to balance our whole life. And what did you work on first? And how did you, both of you, come together and figure that, wow, you have this great partnership. Let's work on that first. Where did you talk about it?
I'm going to let Claudia chime in on some of this so I don't steal the show here. But I will tell you, we didn't start at zero to come up. We started at minus 100 because of all, and I know Gino's already alluded to it, was all the fines that I had to pay. We were behind on the IRS by 40 grand, owed $8,000 for restitution on bad checks. We had, I had warrants out for my arrest the day I graduated from rehab because we had just not, I had just not shown up to court on things, and had they put bench warrants out.
It's still saying hard for him to say I, right? He still says we, he lumps you in there, doesn't he? He blames you for it, huh?
Probably because we lived through it together.
You're married, you know what I mean? Yeah, you're married, exactly. So it's a we.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, guys, you're good. And I'm going to interject because I think the reality is that we had to work on our marriage. Our marriage suffered so much from Rob's addiction. And, you know, we had domestic violence. We had quite a few issues and the communication was not there. So even though Rob was doing better and he was clean and sober and he was working on himself, our marriage was to the point that had we not done something for our marriage, there would be no marriage. And so I think that was a turning point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you do for the marriage? You said, what are the first steps that you do for a marriage to start repairing?
We did counseling, which, you know, painful for guys, of course. Sure.
I got my husband on this podcast. That's our counseling.
This is our counseling right now.
We have to read books together. Talk about each other.
We had accountability partners. You know, we have people in our lives that could come up to me and say, well, you know, you kind of were at fault there, and vice versa. And someone that could just come alongside and say, okay, it's going to be okay, and hold our hands a little bit. And then part of one of the ministries that we...
Marriage and
Counselors. Yeah, sorry. Thank you. I couldn't remember the name of it. We went to a retreat called Marriage Encounters. And that was huge. I mean, it sucked because we literally had to be in a room and had to look at each other and communicate. And, you know, at times it was painful. There were a lot of tears. There was a lot of anger, but it's stuff that we had to have come out. And, you know, throw into the fact that we're a blended family. So, you know, you throw all this stuff into it. And yes, you know, our marriage was suffering. And so for us to work on it was the most important thing we could have done. And like now, like we love each other so much. Everybody sees us and they're like, oh, they're newlyweds, and we're not. You know? But it's because, you know, we have come across so much. God has done so much for us that we can enjoy each other and just know that, you know, he has my back, I have his back, and we can keep going.
Different world. Yeah. But, you know, you don't remove drugs and alcohol and all the wreckage of that automatically be healed, right? So we started our first business, as the book talks about. We bought our first business, acquired it, moved from Arizona to California, kind of burnt all the ships that were going to take us back to the homeland. We were all in, only to realize that our marriage was in desperate need of attention. And it took some serious work to get it back to even par, if you will.
I think the theme of a show should be the world rewards action, not a decision. Because you say that in the book, and it's very important. Jake and Gino, we say education times action equals results. Mm-hmm. You know, you need that action. The decision is great. I decide to do something, but you guys pulled it through. Yeah. I mean, you pulled it through. You did the hard work. You watched Carlton Sheets till the sun came down. You paid off all of your loans. You paid off all the bills. You moved from Arizona to California. You stayed together. You did the counseling. So I hope that everyone's hearing this.
Yeah.
Nothing is easy in life that's worth it. There's nothing, anything easy, whether you're having children, whether you're creating a business, whatever it is, they have a boss, everything is hard. But I love that the world rewards action, not a decision. Yeah. I want everyone to write that
down.
And
I love that the two of you struggled through that retreat, because that's something that people need to hear. And marriage is not easy. Mm-hmm. It's not simple, you know, with lovey-dovey. Yes, it has the moments, of course, but it does take a lot of effort and work.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have to be uncomfortable. You had mentioned that in the book, be uncomfortable and then take action, because mm-hmm. going into that, now you have to reveal a lot of things. Maybe you don't want to, you don't want to admit to, and that's where you get that strong marriage, is being honest with each other and open, and forgiveness. All of that has to come out, but we have to work for it. We have to actually Absolutely. Work for it.
Absolutely. And you know, it's, I think it's every day. I don't think people realize that sometimes it's every day, you know. Rob may do something that I don't like. I may do something he doesn't like. It's every day. Yes. And mm-hmm. and everybody thinks, oh, we're going to get married and it's going to be great, mm-hmm. but it's not, mm-hmm. it's work. Mm-hmm. And you're only going to get exactly what you were saying. It's the action part of it. Yes. You know, you're going to get what you yeah. put into it.
Exactly. Let me share the 8-step formula. I'm going to say it now. I want everyone to write these down. I'm going to have them in the show notes as well. The first of the 8-step formula is done. The next one is being uncomfortable and taking action. That's number 2. Number 3 is the wave of momentum. Number 4 is prepare now. Number 5 is open to the unexpected. 6 is always feel like winning. Number 7 is the law of exposure. And number 8 is you won't do it alone. Rob, which one of those stands out to you? If I had to ask you which one of those 8 steps just jumps out to you and says, that one was really important. I know they're all important. I know they're all really important because you're starting out. But if you want to pick one or two.
Incredibly important. One of the most important things, I think, for anybody that's going through coming up a success, apartments, acquisitions, business acquisitions, is chapter 6 talks about you won't always feel like you're winning. Mm-hmm. You just won't. And that's the for your listeners, that's the chapter where I really unpack the challenges that were in our marriage, mm-hmm. because we had a thriving, successful, blowing it up, killing it auto repair mm-hmm. business. And her and I were going home at night and not even talking to each other because mm-hmm. our relationship mm-hmm. was so strained. Mm-hmm. So you won't always, even you can have seasons of summer and 3 or 4 areas of your life and still have an area of winter, because which will make you not even feel like you're winning, no matter how well you're doing in other areas of your life. And now, number one, that needs attention. You need to fix whatever that winter is, if it's fixable. It could be something you have no control over. It could be a death. It could be of a pet, for that matter, that's got you down in that area. But to mourn and move on, or to fix what you can fix and fix that winter as quickly as possible, just know that it isn't always sunshine and rainbows. Mm-hmm. We're going to have some drama. And that's what, and you know, I think that's the way that was written by the Lord himself. He mm-hmm. wants us to struggle through that drama so we can be better human beings. Mm-hmm.
I have a quote that I've been referring to the last couple of weeks. I read it through Nir Eyal's book called Indistractable. And he says in the book, our perception of who we are changes what we do. And I think part of your perception, when you realize you're a child of God, and all of a sudden that is changes everything, game over. I am here to lead a better life. Do you right. think that really took hold of you? And I think everyone listening to this, how we perceive ourselves ultimately challenges to what we do. If you're an addict and you revert back to that, how are you perceiving yourself as that addict, or are you perceiving yourself as somebody higher and somebody better than that person? Because we are all created on this world to do better, to be better, to impact others. And if we have that picture of ourselves, we're going to take those actions. So, you know, what do you think about that quote? How does that resonate with you?
I think it resonates perfectly because mm-hmm. in the first few years of sobriety, I felt that way. I was mm-hmm. still a shoplifting, fraudulent schemes, petty theft, drug addict in my own mind. And I talk about it in the book as well. You know, I'd have a customer from time to time who didn't know who the owner was that would ask me, are you the owner? And my first reaction would be, no, I'm not. Because that's how little I thought of myself. And eventually over time, the answer was not yet.
Where's that shift? Where did you make that shift over time? Was it the confidence? Was it Claudia saying, you know, you're better than that? Was it through prayer life? Was it through proximity with others? Where did that come from?
That was through Claudia's support and through some books that I read, getting around people that I had never met that mentored me. One of them, as you know from the book, is Zig Ziglar, See You at the Top, phenomenal book that taught me that I'm a child of the king. I got royal blood flowing through my veins, and I already have all the things I need to get everything I want in life. I just need to cultivate them.
Mm. You had just said something really important, and we always talk about who you're surrounded by, who's in your circle, the people in your life. But you just said something that was interesting. It's the books we read too. It's yes. who's influencing us that are no yes. longer here. I'm holding up The Cannolis Exploded, by the way, because it was the closest one in my hand. But that is our little kid's book of what something Love bad it. Happens. What are you going to do about it? But it's so important that it's what we're reading, what we're listening to, who we're listening to, yeah. not just the people in our immediate circle mm-hmm. that we're physically hanging out with, right?
It's all the intake, absolutely. Amen. Everything we're intaking.
And that's what chapter 7 talks about. The name of that chapter is you must be aware of the law of exposure. And the law of exposure simply says, what I expose myself to, I shall become. As you alluded to, is the books, tapes. No, yep. There's no more tapes.
I say that too.
Books, CDs, okay. Podcasts, YouTube videos.
It's in the cloud somewhere. Right. You know, cloud.
Rob, I got news for you. There's not many CDs around there either. And the books are going by the wayside as well.
I still own cassettes. Okay?
Yes,
I
don't know we have the VHS. Them, we still have VHSs too. We took the VHS.
Well, Rob is saying any way that intake is so important because what you put in your mind ultimately stays. And I was fortunate, my perception changed when I partnered up with Jake and I started doing the actions of what a multifamily investor does. What is a multifamily? Once I started taking those actions, my perception changed from the pizza guy to like, I can become a multifamily investor. I think everyone has to adopt that. And you need to find people who are mentoring you, who you want to admire. I think Zig Ziglar was amazing. I had his son on the podcast about a year ago. His son is just amazing, Tom.
That
family is amazing. Their message is awesome. I used to listen to that every day going to work for years. Him and Jim Rome, I was just listening to the two of them and it would just change my mindset. It would just change my state. And that's really important for everybody out there. Find the people whose message resonates with you.
Right. And you know, let's face it, this world beats us to death on a daily basis and pounds our confidence in ourselves and our belief in ourselves. So continually getting around those people that are going to build us up, the teachers and preachers that really remind us how special we are and that God has put us all here for a special purpose. And we need to continue every day working towards that.
Exactly. Yeah. Something that stood out in the book for me was it said, be humble enough to ask for help.
Yeah.
And this is huge to me because a lot of times we want to be strong. We want to be able to do it ourselves, our way. We got it. We don't need anyone to give us a hand. And we feel like we have to do it in order to look successful. What is your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, you are certainly with that type of thinking, and I come from that type of thinking, and I've had to fight it for a long time as well. You are certainly limiting the capabilities that you have in this world. No matter what your mission is, I don't care if you're a missionary out in the mission fields or you're a business owner, an apartment syndicator, it's a team sport. And if you will just understand that, you're going to take the lid off your capacity jar and tenfold, 50-fold, 100-fold where you're going to end up with your mission if you'll just invite other people into the dream.
When did that start happening for you? Because that must have been very difficult for you because, you know, on the road, on the streets, all by yourself, always looking out and just being aware. When did you allow that to happen to you as far as letting other people in and not having to be right all the time?
It happened in the probation officer's meeting room when I filled out the intake application for my new probation, who was the one that actually directed me to the 30-day rehab. And I knew that's when I said to myself, I'm done. I'm absolutely done. And I did. I won't say it doesn't all come at once, but the spirit of humility, for the first time, I was able to receive that. And then, you know, in the book, in the 12-step rooms of recovery, number one, there was a counselor there that I befriended that I still know to this day, taking their counsel. Then in the rooms of recovery, we have something called a sponsor, that's your mentor in recovery, taking their suggestions without debate. Then, you know, in the world of business, it was realizing that if I didn't start spreading the wealth of responsibility to other people, I was gonna be there from 6 a.m. till midnight every single day. So I got to start hiring some people and pouring into them and developing some strategic depth in my companies, creating leaders. That's where it started, to answer your question. But little by little now, you know, in the world of apartments and business, and it's definitely a team sport, whether it's people that are on your team or whether it's people that advise you, attorneys and other people that are on your power team.
Claudio, what about you as far as, you know, did you ask for help? Were you going to like, nope, I'm going to do this on my own. I don't want anybody's help because I don't want to hear what they have to say to me. You know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean. And no, I think, you know, especially when our marriage was so bad, we had to ask for help. There was no choice there. If we didn't then we wouldn't have a marriage. But it also took me working on myself. You know, I think people forget that you still have to work on yourself. You can surround yourself with a lot of people, but if you don't work on yourself and take some of that action for yourself, that's not going to happen either. So, you know, as much as it sucks sometimes, because, you know, who likes to work on yourself, right? You know, but you have to do that. And and just taking that into consideration and surrounding myself with other people, you know, I had to come alongside of other women that knew me and loved me. And again, like I said, you know, they could tell me what I was doing wrong as well. That makes a huge difference. And in our businesses, you know, Rob and I would not have accomplished what we accomplished at our businesses, our auto repair shops, if it wasn't because of the people that we were able to have in our life. And, you know, some of those people were our family for that amount of time. So, you know, you have that as well. Yeah.
What does the future have in hold for Rob and Claudia? What are you guys looking forward to in the future?
Well, that's a great question. So we got a lot of categories there, but
we got time here. Let it rip.
Main one is ministry. We've recently transplanted over to Las Vegas, and people say, why Las Vegas? And the real answer is, why not? Because we know the Lord has a mission for us here in Las Vegas. He's little by little revealing what that is. We're already involved in some ministries here, but I'm also not known very well here. Like I come from a very small town where I was kind of a big fish, and now I'm in a very big town where I'm a teeny weeny fish, and the Lord says, just trust me. So what does the future look like for us? In that department, we're building a ministry and using that book as a ministry to teach people that anything can be accomplished if they'll just put God first. And then naturally, we're apartment syndicators. So we are constantly working deals in the apartments. We're looking at retiring, you know, the kids, and we're inviting the kids into that. So kids are getting education now. And that's, you know, for those of us that are parents with adult children, that's not an easy transition. And we talk that, you know, the drama as a parent never goes away. It just changes, right?
Yeah, so
we're not chasing around toddlers and diapers anymore. Now I have to teach our young adults about wealth and the creation of it and how to transfer it to them eventually. So we're working through those details with some family meetings and developing a family mission statement right now. And yeah, so pretty cool stuff.
I should have asked this sooner, and I don't know why, before we wrap everything up. Rob, how do you feel when you talk to your kids about your past? I mean, are you ashamed about it? I mean, do you share with your children? Do you want to be the role model to them? Because for me, when I was at the restaurant, I felt like I was letting my kids down, even though I was a good father and all. I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. I felt like I'd come home from work. I was tired. I was angry. And I didn't feel like I was living up to the ideal role model. How are those discussions with your children going as far as, you know, from young to adulthood?
That's a great question. So my two sons lost me because of my addiction, and my daughter lost me a little bit because of balance, you know, balance, focus. Anybody that takes a business and brings it to its best abilities is that doesn't invite people in soon enough is going to be a little bit out of balance. So at one of our first family meetings, I actually apologized to my kids. And here's the awesome story that goes with that, because this is a very, very kind of leads right into a pretty awesome story that recently happened. I apologized to them. I was in tears a little bit. They were in tears a little bit. My wife was on the call. You know, one of my sons interrupted me as I was apologizing and going through that a little bit and said, hey, just so you know, we don't feel that way. We don't feel like we lost you. As a matter of fact, we see how hard you've been working on yourself. We see the changes that you made, and we're very proud of you. And all my other children, I have two other children. It's not like we have a baseball team or anything, but they, all my other kids chimed in and said, yeah, they all agreed, which was very surprising and touched my heart, quite honestly. I do feel like I'm a mentor to them. I do feel like because of the successes that we've had, that we've set the bar kind of high, but I've made it clear to them all that, look, my goal was to surpass what my parents did in all areas. And that needs to be your goal too. And we're going to set the bar kind of high, but you need to be working on yourselves so that you're surpassing the bar that your mom and I set.
Awesome. I love that you apologize. And we forget that as parents, that's what we need to do at times, is to apologize and to be real with our children. And it's interesting that we always assume what they're thinking. We always assume how we've hurt them and how they're affected by them. We don't usually ask them, or we don't let them explain, no, that's not what I think. And I love that part of it, because let everyone know, everyone listening, we don't know what the other person's thinking, but we can bring it up. We can talk about it. We can apologize about it. We can ask them what they're thinking about for further healing, because that's what you know, it's hard to be a parent. It really is. Yeah. When the kids get older, it's different. Like mm-hmm. you said, it's different. We're not in the, and we feel like we're always in control, but we weren't. We were never really in control. Let's be honest.
Well, and they have to make their own decisions. They have to take their own actions. Right. So.
Yes, but we are able to bring it up. And that's what I love to hear that you, that you did.
Well, and then just as a sidekick to that, my sons and I've been to the Grand Canyon numerous times. I always said, someday I'm going down in there. We're going to spend a little bit of time down there. Well, my sons and I spent 5 nights and 6 days with 50 pounds on our back, going from rim to rim to rim. Mm-hmm. I convinced them to go, and we had a blast. It was like a dad and son's trip. And now we've set aside doing that once a year, at least. Mm-hmm. And we've done quite a bit of family vacationing as well. So I asked my daughter, I said, hey, I did the boys thing. What do you want to do? She says, I want to jump out of a plane.
Oh,
I said,
boy.
I'm in. So we'll be doing that too.
Oh, boy. I'll send some pictures. That's fun. Wow. I would never do it if my daughter asked me, but like, you have fun. You let me know how that was.
That's awesome. Rob, how can listeners get a hold of you?
You can go to my website. It's addictedtolifebook.com, addictedtolifebook.com. I've actually done, for your listeners, there's a button up there that will be up for a couple more weeks that they can click on and download the free audio version of the book. They can purchase the book there as well. It's a life-changing journey. And for those of you that haven't seen it, every chapter starts with a different mugshot of mine. I had a lot of mugshots to choose from, but I chose my favorite 8, so you won't be disappointed. And the foreword of the book was written by one of my arresting officers in 1999. And chapter 8 is going to tell you how we reconnected. Only the hand of God could have written that story. So you're really going to love it. So if you do decide to get a hard copy, cheap money, it's $20. I do autograph and personalize every book that's purchased.
That's awesome.
Incredible.
We want to thank you both for being on and for sharing your story and for just seeing that hard work. And I'll end it with this. The world rewards action, not a decision. We're all out there making decisions throughout the day. Take some actions for those decisions. Any final words, Joel?
No, beautiful story. Thank you so much for being here and sharing it, because this is closer to a lot of people's families and lives than we really know. And so I appreciate that. And I thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys having us.
Take care.
You too.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.